Oh my God, it's really good to see you people. For those of you who don't know, I have been on vacation, a term I will use loosely, this summer after my first year here at Brew. And so I haven't been in the pulpit for a month, and I haven't seen many of you for a long time. Of course, some of you I haven't met. It's been a rough summer. I've missed many of you in part because you often carry humor that carries me through, or good stories, or in hard times, as though the ones we've shared in joys and sorrows are others we can commiserate. This summer, amidst moving, still here in Manassas, but moving to a new house, things kind of fell apart, almost literally. The house flooded. AC didn't work, so I was a hot mess, literally. But also at the same time, I lost a family member. I lost my grandmother. And I went back to North Carolina for the memorial service. Now, it's interesting going back to the small town that I grew up in and being experienced in that small town as an interloper. Maybe you've had this experience too. Many people who come to the greater DC, Northern Virginia area move here. Some people grew up here, of course, but one of the great things about this area is that it's sort of magnetic and it draws people in. And so we go and we travel back home somewhere. And I went back to this little town in North Carolina called Asheboro. One night, I went to the grocery store to get something for my two-year-old, milk or something. And the cashier, who I think was probably in high school, maybe right out of it, but I think in high school, was asking if I was from out of town. And I'm like, no, I was here before you. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about because you were here before me, right? You know that. So she was asking, you know, are you from out of town? I showed her my license for, I think I used my debit card. And I said, yes. She asked why. And somehow, I never quite know how this happens, but somehow she asked the question that I hate to get sometimes, like at 10:30 when I'm in basically pajamas at my grandmother's funeral, which is, what do you do for a living? It's not the question I want at the grocery store. A few years ago, many Unitarian Universalists talked about something called putting together your elevator speech. It filled the magazine, the UU World, and lots of different sermons. It surfaces ever so often. And the idea is that you should be able to condense whatever Unitarian Universalism is to some statement just short enough that you could say it in the amount of time it takes you to get from one floor to the other in an elevator. We don't really tell you how many floors you get, how many people are there. You're just, you know, amorphous. No one calls it the grocery store question, or the barbershop question, or the picking up your kids from daycare question, or the fight over your grandparents' funeral question, but that's really what it is. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever gotten the question in an elevator, and I write a lot of them. How many of you have put together some version of what it means to be a UU in some small, condensed way? Show of hands to some of you. Nicely done. You know what I'm going to do. It's been a while since I've been here, but I do a little call and response for those of you who are new. So, what's your version? Bruce, what you got?
I always tell people we're Quakers with an attitude.
For those of you who didn't hear, the Right Reverend Bruce, we're Quakers with an attitude, and the Quakers I know would give you plenty of attitude about that. Quakers with an attitude, that's good. We work well with them. What else? What else we got? Lois. All about helping people. Did you get some lyric? That's good. What you got, Amy?
I usually say, for a good moral-based religion that isn't Christian.
Nice. I'm going to come back to that. Go ahead, Jess.
We're accepting of all faiths and all religions.
Good, good. Go ahead, Joan. I got to wear my glasses more.
Growing up, Christians strive to do good.
Grown up hippies. Oh, I'm not sure it's that grown up. Who do we? Oh, go ahead, Carol. Good. Historically Protestant, believing in God, Jesus, and Jesus is optional. Anyone else? You got one, Don? Go ahead, Faye.
Just that we're a very diverse community, and yeah. We accept diversity, and we study all religions.
Really nice. These are good. Have you all been taking notes?
Yes.
I really like this line. I'm going to talk a couple times about this TV show, The West Wing, but there's a line from The West Wing where it says, good writers borrow from other writers, great writers steal from them outright. So just take these. These are good to have. I like all of these. One of the most familiar ways people talk about Unitarian Universalism is to break down the two words into their kind of historical roots, and some of you touched on them with some of the Christian, post-Christian, after-Christian, not quite, we don't know, Venn diagram stuff. Unitarianism used to believe that Jesus was kind of like us, people, human, not so divine, at least no more so than anyone else. Many of you might know the Indigo Girls song that talks about me and Jesus grew of the same heart. The only distance is that I keep messing up is one version of the song. They use an F-bomb as the other. Jesus as a human, universalism believing we are all loved and that God is so loving that hell doesn't exist or that no one would end up there. And so one great way to word it, if you're ever struggling in that moment, is to say one God, no hell. Four words. I don't care if you're going one floor. Four words will get you there. One God, no hell. Now, it's true that we may not necessarily even believe in God on an individual level or institutional level. So that gets a little tricky, but you can at least get to that historical level there. Back to the young lady at the grocery store. I told her what I did. There are times, I'll be honest with you, ministers don't tell. We make it up. We put on our earphones on the airplane. We do anything but. I think it was because I was tired, but I told her what I did. Oh, that sounds interesting. What type of church are you a minister at? I told her. Oh, I've heard of that. Now I thought she was just pulling my leg, because my small town in North Carolina did not have a Unitarian Universalist church. I know this. When I grew up in this town, I would have longed for a Unitarian Universalist church. Many of you may have seen this ad in years past or have heard of it kind of as a legend of yore. There was an ad in many newspapers, I think Fairfax talked about it, that said, are you a Unitarian without knowing it? Running in the 70s and 80s, delineating some of the characteristics about who we are, that we are a good moral people who try to work on making life better for others, that we like to create a diverse community, recognizing that we have different beliefs. When I first found my Unitarian Universalist church back in North Carolina, I sat in the pews and I felt like I was at home. And then I'll be honest, I was a little resentful that there wasn't a UU church back in the town I grew up in. The first church I was a member of was about 30, 35 miles away. It was kind of the next big city over. And I remember being in that place, talking with the minister, and he would point out, oh yeah, so-and-so, they live in Asheboro. Maybe you could get a ride with them. And here I'm thinking, wait, why don't we just meet in Asheboro? Where have they been all of my life? There's something about meeting people who have a similar experience and background to you that makes you feel whole again. And that's part of what can be hard in our lives, is losing track of our people. Part of what's comforting about coming to church is knowing even if we disagree, even if we have different beliefs about what is holy or whether there is something divine, we still can be cared for in love. We can share our deepest joys, our deepest sorrows. We can ask questions and not be pushed to the side as we have been so often in our lives. Part of what happened this summer was that I got mail here at the church and otherwise mentioning that this church was a cult and I was leading my people to hell. There was a little theological concern for me there. Didn't they get that we didn't believe in hell? At least get it right. But there was something about you people are strange that felt off-putting to me. It's true that we often want to find similar others, and when we do, we kind of build a community around that, but that doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. Finding our people and finding our identity holds people throughout all of our land. Many years ago, when I traveled with my now wife back to her home for the first time, she would take me around all of the places she grew up, also in a small town. She grew up in Indiana, and we would visit the same grocery stores, the same restaurants, the same markers, in fact, even the same place where some of her grandparents and relatives were buried. At each of those places, and I will say this is different than my hometown in Asheboro, not that I'm bragging, but in each of the places in Indiana, each person met me with a singular question. Who are your people? The first couple times, I didn't answer them. Not for sake of being rude, but I didn't get the question. Who are your people? This question of lineage, as my wife soon pointed out to me, was just a way people knew one another in this small town of 300. You were either from the Abrams family, the Burke family, or maybe one or two others. But you had people, and if they didn't know your people, you were an interloper. It was amazing to me how often people would eye me with suspicion, even though I felt like I must fit in this place, even though I had someone bringing me along with her. But people wanted to know, can I trust you? Are you safe? And so often in our lives, we worry about becoming open and vulnerable and taking risks with others before we know that they are safe and trustworthy as well. Finally, when I got the question of who are your people, I would explain, well, I'm from North Carolina. I don't think you know my people. And that would suffice. North Carolina was a good answer. But I had a feeling that if I said I was from certain places in the world, they wouldn't be quite so friendly. I had worked some time in Indiana previously to that during a political campaign. My bachelor's degree is in something called identity studies. Today's sermon about who are you focuses on our faith identity, but it's true that I am utterly concerned with who we are on every level. And I really always have been. It's not just about who our people are, but who we are at our core. And when we can move from beyond our ancestors, move beyond who our people are to who we are and who we can become, something powerful can happen. That's in great part what Unitarian Universalism is. Part of what I tell people when I tell them about our faith is that we are open. There's not just one truth for all of eternity. That we know that through time we can change the world, even if only slightly. Because I've seen it in my life. I've seen it in the lives of others. I have seen the stories of people in remarkable ways beating illness, cancer, addiction, abuse, and poverty, coming out of systems of poor education, out of oppression. We know that the questions aren't disconnected from one another, that who are our people often lead to who are we, but they are not so intricately connected that we can't get out of those cycles. I invite you to take a moment to take a deep breath in, to inhale and then exhale, breathing the same air as one another in this space. As we share the same sanctuary and sacred space, we face a fundamental human paradox. We are at once unique and uniform. Humanity viewed from the lens of the heavens is too blurry to be distinct. And yet each of our lives is too real, too vivid, too full of joy and sorrow and pleasure and pain to ignore on its own. On one hand, there are millions of years and stars. There are planets. What we do in any given moment may not matter to the sun or to things far beyond us, and yet what we do matters. To the people we love, to the people that we can create a world for, and it matters to us. Feminist author and teacher Bell Hooks asked a question. Why do we worry so much about identity and difference? What's all this clamoring about anyway? She writes, all the clamoring is about seeking wholeness. It's about each person, each perspective, each truth being granted sufficient respect that we truly listen and allow ourselves to be changed by one another. All the clamoring is for us to recognize that our lives are intertwined, so intertwined that each is accountable to the other. All the clamoring is for truth, and the truth is, I need you. I need you, all of who you are, the experiences and the perspective you bring, so that I may know truth beyond my partial truth. All the clamoring is for justice. We need each other and what we can all do for justice. And that, my friends, is in large part what liberal religion is, a space where each of us has a part of the story. None of us holds all of it. We recognize that there are some who find the truth in Christianity or in Buddhism or in agnosticism or atheism or in all of them. There is a mystical truth born through the different experiences in our lives. But it's about sharing our lives with one another. I ask you this morning, who are you? Who have you found yourself to be, and are you able to live with a deeply authentic nature? In this church, we ask you to put aside the masks. I've heard so often people say, well, I wasn't sure I was going to come to church because I didn't want to have to kind of put on a mask, the church face, and let people know that I was doing okay, even if I was still feeling sad or sick. And I thought, what a shame. What a shame if there was any other place in the world that you should be able to come and let your guard down. A sanctuary should be it. A place of hope and faith and love where we create justice together. And so I hope that we can do that. I hope that this is the safe place where we can create a community where our authentic selves are welcomed, even as we grow and transform into something new. I invite you to imagine that world for just a moment. Imagine all of those people out there who are Unitarian Universalists and don't know it yet, in part because we have yet to tell the story. We've yet to tell the story of our ancestors who came before. We've yet to find our elevator speech or our grocery store speech or whatever. We've yet to tell our story. And when we can do that, when we can tell our story in the face of people saying that we are cults or not religious or not important, then we become whole again. Amen, and blessed be.